Hello and welcome. My name is Marian Jensen.
I'm Sarah Eden.
And this is episode 32 of the Appendix Podcast. Rob is out again, still with some medical issues, but we're hoping he returns soon. And we have a couple of things today. We're going to talk news first. And we have Jeanette Rallison is still with us. She's in our green room right now, the Appendix Podcast green room.
It's very swank.
That's right. She was with us last week, and she's taking a break. You can only handle so much Marian Jensen and Sarah Eden. So,
oh, this is the truth.
A little bit of refreshment, and she'll be back in a minute. But we thought we would talk news for the past month, and actually some interesting stuff. But first, we should talk about the biggest news, which is, of course, in 7 days, I believe it's 7 days, Rob's book, Variant, comes out, hits stores, ships from Amazon, and that's an exciting thing.
Absolutely, and he's getting some great reviews, so it's been fun to watch all that come in.
Yep, they just keep piling in, and he's we'll be doing a book signing next week here locally, here in Utah, and so fun stuff for him. And actually, today's the 27th. If you're listening to this when it's posted, it will be the 28th. Rob's contest goes until the 30th, so there's still a chance to win that Kindle. You can go to his blog, robisonwells.com. Is it .org?
I think it's .com.
robisonwells.com, and read how you can enter. Still a chance to win a Kindle, and I believe some Amazon gift certificates. So,
yeah.
All right, let's talk news. We'll start with the smaller stories, and then kind of work our way up. I think it's been going for about 3 weeks now. Amazon is offering Kindle Daily Deals. I don't know if you seen those, Sarah?
I haven't, actually.
So what they do is they take books, sometimes fairly well-known books, sometimes not so well-known books, and they usually discount them from anywhere from 57% all the way up to 80%. You can pick up books for sometimes as cheap as 99 cents ebooks. So they change that every midnight. There's a new book up there. That's kind of been fun to watch. I haven't purchased any yet, but there have been some that I was tempted by.
And so are these like real small name authors mixed in with some of the bigger names?
I think so, and they've done a pretty good job of mixing it up. I've seen Water for Elephants, which I know is just made into a movie, or is being made, and it's coming out. I don't know if it's come out, but so, some pretty big names, as well as some lesser known names.
Cool.
Another little bit of news. Stephen King released a novella on Kindle. It's his. It's not his first ever ebook, but it's his first book that he's released only on ebook and not on paper. So, we've seen a lot of midlisters kind of jump the traditional model, and now we see Stephen King's one of the biggest names out there who's kind of testing out the ebook market to see what happens.
Right.
I believe that ebook also has a preview of his newest novel that comes out in November, so you can get that from Amazon.
Smart marketing on his part.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I also found that this is kind of a smaller story, but I thought it was pretty interesting. Thomas Nelson, publisher, acquires their first West Vogue title. And I believe from the article it says Thomas Nelson and Author Solutions established the West Vogue Press self-publishing division with the idea that they would kind of allow folks to self-publish, and then they would use that as a kind of a proving ground to see which books kind of were successful, and then they go out and would buy the best of the best. So they've officially acquired their first one, so I thought that was interesting. We've talked before about self-publishing versus traditional, and here's a traditional publisher who's got a foot in both worlds.
It'll be interesting to see how the traditional publishing world adjusts to the new market and what that's going to mean for authors. It's fun to watch it all unfolding.
Yeah, and in fact, that's one of our stories. There's been a lot of talk about publishers are going the way of the dinosaurs, but In fact, the publishing, there was a report, you know, we hear rumblings about this and that, estimations, but the publishing industry has grown, even though there's been a recession. The last 3 years, they have grown, and it's been mainly from ebooks. So, right. You know, there's this question, can they survive? Well, they're doing quite well, and it's all because of, thanks to ebooks.
Well, I think those publishers and stores and authors who are making that adjustment into the digital world are the ones who are going to survive.
Yep. So traditional publishers can't survive. You know, they've got the backlist to throw up there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just kind of a cash cow waiting to happen. There's still plenty of books that I'd like to see on ebook that I'm going to purchase as soon as they...
as soon as they're available, right.
Yep. I think we talked last time about class action lawsuits being filed against Apple and several of the big publishers over the agency model. But they're a little bit more in the news. Several of the, in fact, the CEO, William Lynch, says that he sees that he's the CEO of Barnes & Noble, says that agency model prices, pricing continues to expand and he sees it becoming the dominant form. So that's, you know, of course, the agency model is where publishers set the price. The bookstores can't sell for more or less. They're forced to sell at that price and have to share the revenue. So
right.
We will watch to see what happens there. See what else have we got here. So we talked about publishers doing better thanks to ebooks. But we are seeing a dent in the sales of mass market paperback. So, you know, we've talked about this before. It is a transition. Not as many mass market paperbacks being sold, but publishers seem to be doing well in the picking up the slack from ebooks.
Yeah, the ratios will change, but in the end, it's still books sold. So it's
right.
A good sign.
You know, and for me, I've noticed that, you know, I hear about a good book and I think, oh, I need to write that down. Check that out when I go to the library, or the next time I'm at Barnes & Noble, I can go, and then I get to the Barnes & Noble, I forgot everything.
Yes, absolutely.
Versus the Kindle that, you know, turns the entire world into a store. You can download the book immediately. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot more, what do they call it, impulse buying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Sony came out with a new ink reader, or they're going to in October, but of course that is overshadowed by the Amazon coming out with a tablet. We'll talk about that in just a minute because that's kind of big news.
Yeah. Isn't it this week they're supposed to come out with it, or this next coming week?
Yeah, see, we need to talk about it right now. In fact, we've picked the wrong day to record the podcast because it's tomorrow.
Okay. So, I thought it was soon.
So our listeners will be saying, hey, the latest news on the Appendix podcast, and we don't even have the details. Although
yeah.
We have heard little bits, apparently it's called the Kindle Fire. We'll see how close we are. The Kindle Fire is a 6 or 7 inch tablet. The estimations are that it's a 7 inch tablet, probably going to be a $250 price tag. Although there have been rumblings it might be $300 with Amazon Prime.
Hmm.
So, you know, I think, you know, you could just say, well, this is just another tablet, but I think that the difference here is that Amazon really has that deep linking. So if you have Amazon Prime, you've got streaming to all of their videos.
Right.
Of course, you're hooked into their library. If you've already got a regular Kindle, then this I could see. I wouldn't say it's an iPad killer, but certainly a contender.
Right, a competitor at least. And I know people who are fans of their Kindles love it as an e-reader. So to be able to take Amazon's e-reader, which is so popular, and add additional features. Yeah, this could be a very viable product.
Yeah, and there's still some question about whether this will have 3G. There's speculation that it will not, so only Wi-Fi. But I believe there's a second one, a 10-inch tablet that's going to be coming out first part of next year, and that one will. So, you know, again, it's like you said, the e-reader, I really like my Kindle. It does one thing and it does it very well.
Right.
But I have the tablet where, you know, I can access my email or Twitter, things like that. It could be a contender, I think.
Yeah. We'll see which one outsells as a Christmas gift this year.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of talk about the iPad is going to be the big ticket item this year. And, you know, if Kindle's got something out too, that might be up there.
Yep. All right, just a couple of other stories. Amazon is now in a lot of libraries. I believe, I wanted to say 11,000 libraries. I have not checked to see if they're in the Davis County Library. I'm hoping so. But it works pretty much like your normal library. You can check out the ebook. You've got it for a few weeks, and then it goes back. As an author, I think, was that a good thing or a bad thing for authors? But you know, I think anytime you get exposure, how many times have you checked out a book? You got halfway through, you got to take it back, you can't read new. Librarians give you dirty looks. So now with the Kindle, you got you got to turn it back in, but you can just turn around and buy it for $5. I think that could be a good thing.
Well, I can't tell you how many times I've read a book at a library from an author I didn't previously know and liked it so much that I went out and bought books by that author because I knew that I liked them and I liked their writing. And I discovered them at a library. I think we'll just see more of that as it becomes more accessible.
And the other interesting thing is how this will again play into for authors who self-publish. So, I self-published a paper book, and it's very difficult for me to get that into libraries. But if libraries, of course, they're going to want to have a vetting process. But to be able to get your book, even if you gave it away to the libraries and let people check it out, I mean, as a self-published author, that would be me striking gold.
Right,
So.
because it's exposure, which is probably the most difficult thing for a self-published author to get.
Exactly. And even if only 1 in 10 people buy the book, if you're in, 50,000 libraries, it's a lot of people checking out your book. So, yeah, that's total speculation on my part, but could be an interesting way for authors to find a market or get their books into people's hand. And then finally, and we've talked a little bit about this earlier, in addition to getting in libraries, Amazon, rumors are that they're going to launch an ebook rental service very similar to Netflix. Sarah, what's your wisdom on this?
Well, personally, when I look at media consumption, I think the trend is less toward ownership and more toward access. And this to me almost feels like a natural extension of the direction we're going in. As an author, of course, you worry about a price structure and how are we going to get paid for that. But I kind of think this is the direction it's going.
And I found an interesting article that talked about the 99-cent price point and some of the concerns, and it brought up a really good point, which was the folks that make money off the long tail are not necessarily the content producers, but the people that have the platform on which that content is sold. So, for example, Amazon is doing quite well because they can sell books and videos and music on that long tail. But how many times, are the authors or the musicians that are on that long tail making a living at it? They're not selling much. But if Amazon gets, 30% of 100 million titles, they're doing just well. So, again, as an author, I kind of worry, well, that's great. I put my book in there and people can rent it whenever they want and read it. And maybe I get a small little bit of change every time somebody checks it out, but is that enough for me to, have a career or things like that? So,
We have way too much to worry about.
that's right. All right, and I think that was all of the news that I had. Did I miss anything, Sarah?
I don't think so.
Okay, so it's the end of September. We'll probably do some more another news roundup toward the end of October. We will call Jeanette back in from the green room, and we're going to have a discussion on antagonists.
All right.
We'll be right back.
We are back, and we are joined for this segment once again by Jeanette Rallison. We're glad that she could be with us. We wanted to talk a little bit about antagonists, one of my favorite topics. So let's just throw it out there. Let's go ahead and define what is an antagonist, Sarah or Jeanette?
I don't know anything.
Tell people. Yeah, your mother-in-law. No, I didn't say that. An antagonist is anyone who opposes the main character's goals. So really, it doesn't always have to be a villain. It a lot of times is a villain. The villains make great antagonists, but it's just somebody who opposes the main character's goals. It can be man against man, it can be man against nature, or it can even be man against himself.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good point that we hear antagonist and we automatically think of the, you know, the guy with the pencil mustache and, you know, the evil villain. But I'm a big fan of the movie Fugitive, and the antagonist in that was, I think his name was Samuel Gerard. He wasn't a bad guy. He was a good guy doing his job trying to catch who he thought was the bad guy. But he made an excellent antagonist, so it doesn't have to be a villain.
I think one of the reasons he was such a good antagonist is because he isn't a bad guy.
Right.
You know, so you don't necessarily want to cheer against him, and yet if he wins, the guy you're cheering for loses.
Right. Injustice will be done.
I love the Darth Vader and Voldemort and, you know, the really scary, powerful antagonists, but I think my favorite antagonists are the antagonists that you do like. For example, in the Ten Commandments and in The Prince of Egypt, both of those have Ramses, who is the antagonist of Moses, and yet you really like Ramses.
Right, or at least you get where he's coming from, you know?
Right, or at least I did. Probably people in the audience are like, what?
You're like, wow, that Jeanette Rallison has problems.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. What makes a good antagonist? You know, we have, you know, I think Lord of the Rings, and we have, that eye up in the tower, and you know, it's definitely as far as causing problems, he definitely caused problems for our heroes. But to me, that's, you know, just an antagonist who's pure evil doesn't always really, it's not interesting to me. So what makes a good antagonist? Mm-hmm.
I think that you kind of hit it on the nail on the head when you talk about pure evil. That can work in fantasies, but in most stories, that's not going to work because we know that most people don't get up in the morning and say, I'm purely evil, and so I'm going to do the things that a purely evil person would do. Who can I thwart? Who can I, you know, I'll go kick kittens and stuff. So
you can't relate to somebody like that.
Yeah, except for Marion does that sometimes. I think you can hit things.
We try not to bring that up.
So you have to make your antagonist a real person. And somebody once said, I'm horrible at quoting people, that, you know, that every villain is the hero of his own story.
Yeah.
So that's an important thing to remember as writers, that we have to give our villains, our antagonists, reasons for what they're doing. And they have their justifications, and they think that they're right.
You know, and really this could be a discussion about protagonists too, because the same things that make a good antagonist make a good protagonist. And to me, it's like, I love the complexity. You know, I don't like my protagonist sparkly clean. I like him to have problems and to be dealing with things. And it's the same way with an antagonist. I want them to have traits. I want at times to feel empathy towards them and understand that, you know, they're not evil. They're people who are just making some wrong choices or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and in romances, very often the antagonist is the hero.
Yes, they are their own.
Yes. And so in those ones, you had better like the antagonist, or the book isn't going to work very well.
Yeah.
Right. And in situations like that, where it's, you know, man versus himself, it needs to be an honest conflict, but also one that's big enough to be the basis of, you know, your plot conflict. Too often it's a shallow thing and the reader just doesn't buy it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's a good point, is the antagonist has to be just as powerful, if not more so, than the protagonist. Otherwise, you know, we're not, there's no tension, there's no conflict.
Right. If you have a weak antagonist, then your protagonist by default is going to be a weak, because he doesn't have anyone that's going to stretch him and make him grow and, you know, worry the reader.
Right.
You know, a lot of the we've talked a little bit about this before in previous episodes. A lot of the TV shows that I'm really enjoying right now, there's just the smallest of lines between the protagonist and the antagonist as far as morals and things, because we see the quote unquote good guys who are doing stuff that sometimes just aren't that good. And the bad guys who really are empathetic. And it, to me, it helps me to relate to both characters, to see, you know, what makes them tick. And ultimately, it's, like I said, a kind of a fine line between a protagonist and antagonist, which makes it interesting to me.
So have your listeners check out Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog.
Yes.
Because the hero of that is the villain, whereas the typical hero, you know, becomes the villain in the story. And I just think that the writer did a great job in making us like a character and cheer for a character who would be the villain in another story.
Yep. Breaking Bad, I've talked about that before. Breaking Bad is about a guy who is making all of the wrong choices. I mean, he's cooking meth and killing people, but he's the protagonist. He's the guy you're cheering for because you understand the reasons he's doing it. And you're not cheering for him because he's doing those things, but you're hoping that he, changes his ways. Or you just, it's fascinating to watch. I think I keep going back to the word complexity. There's just so much complexity in the characters, you just can't stop watching them. Okay, let's throw it out there. Who's your favorite antagonist?
I think Ramses, I already said, because every time I watch those movies, I am hoping for Ramses to see the error of his ways. And, you know, so far it hasn't happened. Maybe if I keep watching it, then one of these times.
We'll get a new version where it's a happy ending.
Yeah, we're
cool. Guess what? I've read the original book. Doesn't turn out so good for Ramses.
Maybe in the sequel.
There you go.
Yes. Sarah, well, how about the rest of you? Who are your favorite antagonists?
You know, one this one's pretty recent, and I've got a lot of favorite ones, but I really liked Heath Ledger's Joker from The Dark Knight.
He was good.
And it kind of goes against what I was just saying. You know, I said that sometimes I like to see what motivates the antagonist and, you know, what makes them choose the wrong. And for him, it was just, I mean, I love that scene where he's got that pile of cash and he's just burning it. And he has no reason to other than just, he's just doing it. He's such a complex character. He lies all the time. It was just totally enjoyable. I thought he made that movie.
Yeah. Oh, yes. He was definitely a memorable antagonist.
Nice.
Sarah, have you got one picked out?
Yeah, I'm going to go all literary and esoteric on you here. I think one of my favorites is one of these where the antagonist is not actually a character. In Jane Austen's Persuasion, which not many people have read it, but it's my favorite of her works, our heroine, who is the protagonist, what she's up against is her own past. She's made mistakes that can't be undone. And the only way for her to move forward and for her to have her happily ever after is for the man that she wronged all those years ago to forgive her. But she has no control over whether or not he does. And so the whole time you're cheering for him to, you want him to, and you get why he can't. It's just this wonderful, fabulous, deep story that you want it all to work out, but you can't possibly see how it will. I think it's fabulous.
So I picked the Joker from comic books, and you just have to upstage me by going all Jane Austen on
that
me.
That's pretty much it. I was going to go with the comic book, but then when you threw that out, I was like, oh, he's going down.
Yeah. Jane Austen trumps all, really.
Honestly, she does.
All right. Anything else on antagonists? Have we covered it?
I think we're good.
I think we have. Okay,
so everyone listening should now be able to write an awesome antagonist.
Write one that entertains Marion and you're good to go.
Perfect.
All right. Thanks again to Jeanette Rallison for joining us on the podcast. Jeanette, tell us once more your book coming out.
Yes, Layers. It comes out September 27th under the pen name CJ Hill. It's about kids who are descendants of the knights who killed the dragons, so they have powers to fight the dragons, and dragons are coming back. And they're going to be great antagonists, because they just want to punch you.
Excellent.
Perfect. See, all they want is a meal. Talk about conflicted.
All right, thanks again, and we'll be back in just a minute.
resurrect a game from the past. Rob's not here to tell us no, so we are going to play Six Degrees, which basically the rules are we take two books and we try to get from one book to the next. We thought as an added bonus, we would try to squeeze Kevin Bacon in there. So this is two books with a side of bacon, as Sarah said earlier.
That's right. That's the new title of this game.
That's right. So we have we picked two books that actually are very similar to each other. I read both of them over the course of the weekend to prepare for this. And that is Good Night Moon and War and Peace. So there's an obvious connection there, but we're going to try to be a little bit creative.
That's right. So, that's right.
Sarah, do you want to go first or do you want me to? I'll let you decide.
Oh, see, and I don't make decisions. The sooner you learn this about me, the better.
All right, I'll start since mine's probably lamer than yours.
I don't know.
Okay, so we start with War and Peace, and of course everybody knows that the War and Peace, the original title was War, What Is It Good For?
You know, I heard that.
made popular by Seinfeld, of course. And as an added bonus, I mean, we've already linked now from War and Peace to Seinfeld, but War and Peace was set in 1806 under the reign of Tsar Alexander. And, of course, we know who played George Costanza.
Jason Alexander.
We've got a double connection there for you. So Seinfeld, we're at Seinfeld. We have our lovely post office worker, Newman.
Newman, yes.
Played by the wonderful Wayne Knight, who happened to also play in a movie called JFK. He was Numa Bertel.
Oh, dear, I know where you're going with this one.
Yes, guess who is also in JFK with Wayne Knight?
Oh, gosh, who could it be?
Kevin Bacon.
Woo-hoo!
And, of course, we know Kevin Bacon also played a character by the name of Jack Swigert. You know who that was?
Yeah, because I think I'd take this same step right here. Apollo 13.
Jack Swigert, of course, was an astronaut who went to where? The moon. In which the little bunny rabbit says goodnight to Jack Swigert and the moon. So there's my connection. War and Peace to Seinfeld, to Newman, to JFK, to Kevin Bacon, to the moon. Sarah,
Nice. Okay, well, I take a slightly different path. Okay, War and Peace by Tolstoy. And everyone knows that Tolstoy was Russian.
Russian.
Who else is also Russian? Vladimir Putin. Right. You don't get much more Russian than that. Okay, little known fact. Vladimir Putin has a dog named Buffy. Did you know this? I know this. That also happens to be the name of the dog actor from the movie The River Wild. Who was in that movie? Could it be...
Kevin Bacon.
Kevin Bacon was also in the movie Apollo 13. And in that movie, Tom Hanks' character has a nightly ritual involving the moon. You remember the whole thumb cover the moon thing?
Yep.
Well, a, quote, nightly ritual involving the moon is pretty much the back cover copy of Goodnight Moon by Margaret Brown. There you go.
I think the connection with the two dogs named Buffy wins hands down.
Woo, woo, woo! There you go. Two books and a side of bacon.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and throw that challenge out. We've picked two paths from War and Peace to Goodnight Moon. Listeners, feel free to take a separate path, although I think we might have to say Apollo 13 is off limits because we both
went that way, yeah.
Okay, we will be back next week. Rob's book will be out. We'll have wonderful things to say about it, and we will talk with you then. Thanks.
All right, bye.